Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Leo Laporte, episode 19 for September 1st, 2007. Get! It's time for Floss once in a while. Weekly.
It's still Floss Weekly.
It's Floss Weekly, and we're hoping someday to get it back to weekly, but at least we're doing something. Thanks to Randall Schwartz, who has valiantly stepped into the fray. Randall, welcome back.
Hi, Leo. Good to be with you again. I've been in Australia since I last talked to you.
Yeah, in fact, we recorded a Floss. In fact, I want to apologize to folks. We had recorded a Floss, a very interesting Floss, but the quality from Australia was subpar, and I just really didn't want to put it out. So we're going to redo it with the same guest. Who's our guest today?
It's Junio Hamano. I can't pronounce his first name or his last name, but he's apparently one of the key figures on the Git software project,
and
which
Git
is what
you
they
can pronounce. I know you can pronounce Git.
I can pronounce Git because it's a short word with only three letters. It's always nice for me to be able to do that. Git is being used to develop the Linux kernel and a number of really interesting projects out there. It was essentially created by Linus Torvalds and his crew once BitKeeper went away as an option for them a couple years ago. And I actually got involved with Git very early on, and I've been using it for my source code management. And I thought it'd be an interesting project to bring to Floss Weekly as a way of talking about other things besides our traditional SVN and CVS and those source code managers.
Yeah, I've never used CVS, but I have, because I've never been on a programming team. But I actually attempted to use SVN and had some pretty good results. Not for programming, but for writing a book. I thought Gamber and I were going to collaborate on a book, and I set up an SVN server. In fact, this is, I think, when you and I first start talking about Git. Uh-huh. Because I set up an SVN server, and I set up Amber in Toronto, and I had we both had checkout capabilities, and we both had update capabilities. So the whole idea of a version system is that multiple people can work on the same code, or in this my case, the same chapters. Upload their changes, download changes from the other author, and if there's a conflict, merge the conflicts together. That's basically what a versioning system does, right?
Yes, and Git takes that on concept on steroids. Essentially allows hundreds of people to all have their own view of the entire history of the project, and yet be able to make changes, make updates, even make multiple different versions of the updates all locally before deciding, okay, this is the one to publish, and then publish that to the level of what Linus likes to call lieutenants, that are actually about 10 people that sort of sort out each major functional area. And then those 10 people can then eventually present their areas to Linus, and he can pull it all together and without getting all confused. This is what Git is really good at.
Yeah, you can see in a big programming project how useful, how in fact necessary, a versioning system of some sort is.
Yeah, the Linux kernel is 35,000 files. So to sort this out with all the 200 creator contributors with 35,000 files would be a mess with something like SVN. And Linus makes many references to that.
One of the reasons that you recommended I use this instead of SVN, I thought, oh, hey, this is really cool, because the nice thing about SVN is it's also in a way backing up what we do, because the server, they call it a repository, has every copy of everything we've ever done, all the changes. So it makes a great backup. But you pointed out that it's still only one place where all versions are kept. Well, I don't have them locally. Amber doesn't have them locally. Git doesn't do that. Every single participant has all the changes, right?
Absolutely, and that means that you have multiple places where the same information is recorded, and it does it in an efficient way. In fact, the Linux kernel checkout, the current files of the Linux kernel, are only twice the size of the entire repository back to the beginning of the 2.6 development.
That's
interesting. This is really amazing. Yeah.
Well, let's talk to Junio. Junio Hamano is on the line from Los Angeles. He is a project leader. I guess. Is that what you call it, Junio, the guy in charge of Git?
It's just the maintainer.
The maintainer. All right. Hey, Junio, welcome. And we apologize for forcing you to do this all over again.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. How did you get involved with Git, Junya?
Thing was I was benefiting from a Linux kernel team's effort tremendously, both personally and at work. I mean, we use open source products, and I personally use open source products. I just wanted to give something back, and Linux announced they are moving away from BitKeeper. They don't have a good replacement. I mean, he didn't find a good replacement. He wrote one, and obviously, more people were really looking at his code and trying to improve on it. And project was young, so I thought, oh, this is a great opportunity to get involved.
So Linus wrote the first implementation of Git.
Yes.
Why didn't he use SVN? He's actually been fairly outspoken. He hates CVS. That's pretty clear.
Right. During the 2 years they used BitKeeper, he really learned that distributed is really the way to manage people with, 1,000 people, the effort. I mean, the kernel is both big in source code wise, but the developer base and variety of things people try to do with the source code base is quite diverse. So a centralized model doesn't really work well. So he wanted to have something distributed, and there weren't that many that usable. I mean, there weren't any that was usable, available. So that's why he wrote it.
And how does Git handle this differently? I guess we already addressed that. It's the repository is distributed.
Yes. Essentially, everybody has his own copy of everything.
And, isn't that less efficient, though? I mean, I guess the checkout takes a while anyway.
Yeah. One thing that allows you to do is you can take your laptop on airplane and work on that while completely disconnected. And one good thing about this distributed model is even if you are not working with 1,000 people, even if you are working with only 3 or 4 people, is unlike traditional centralized model, it separates the act of committing from act of publishing. So when you are doing something, working on something, you sometimes say, okay, this is good, and then if you do not snapshot that state, you may later regret after you make further changes and say, oh, I used to have much better shape, something much better. Now I screwed up. I want to go back. So you want to snapshot things. But if you are on centralized system, every snapshot you make will be immediately visible to others. And some of your earlier snapshot may really be crap that you would later
never
regret. So what Git and there are other distributed systems in the field, those distributed systems gives you freedom to not publish. Not to publish what you do while you are experimenting. So commit will just become snapshotting the state, and then you have chance to reorganize what you did after you get to a very good state and say, pretend I'm a perfect human and I did it this way. This is a perfect sequence of changes, and publish that result.
And even more than that, what Git also allows you to do, and I'm sure you'll address this later, Junio, is that I can have in my local repo, without publishing it, I can have multiple forward movements where I think, okay, I'm going to solve problem X and problem Y and problem Z, and I can actually start a series of commits moving each of those forward. And when I'm either happy with the solution for problem X, I can fold it into my master thread, or I can simply say, oh, my solution to problem X really doesn't work, and completely abandon it without ever having to suffer the public embarrassment of having publicly published that series of commits that got me to my broken solution for X.
Yeah, that's right.
So I can see the real advantage for programmers. Git works more like they think, or more it fits how you work. Is that what you would say, Randall?
I think so. I think, you know, one of the things that was interesting about when I was using CVS and SVN is that I would spend hours, maybe days, working with an uncommitted version of my updated files to try to get things just right before I publish them.
Right.
And the problem with that is now it's only in one place. It's on my disk. It's not in the central repo. So if my disk goes away, I've lost all that unless there's backups being made of that. What Git allows me to do is make commits along the way and even share those, say, with my friends before, say, the whole community. Say, I've got this possible solution for problem X. How about you? Does it work on your system too? And that's the kind of thing I can share before publishing it sort of in the public arena on a particular project. And especially with something as large as, say, Linux or X11 or one of the big projects that's using Wine, all these big projects that are using Git, it's really great to be able to share a thread of a possible solution with neighbors before sharing it with the general public.
It's much more of a collaboration tool. It sounds like
exactly.
Yeah. Now, how would you compare it to other distributed tools like Mercurial or Monotone or Bazaar? Where would be the differences there?
They are all still in development systems, including us. So I'm not quite the best person to answer that question honestly, because I know I would do a really lousy job in making comparison with other systems.
We won't ask Junior to do
because,
that.
Because I'm partial, and I know a lot more about Git than other systems.
The other ones suck. You could just say that, Junior. It's okay.
I can say that they solve the same space. They're really trying to all solve the same space.
This
in fact, Mercurial was created the same week as Git.
Yeah.
It was basically to solve the problem of the fact that BitKeeper had gone away and Linux kernel needed new development stuff. But from timing comparisons that we've seen, from produced benchmarks and things, Git is clearly the optimum for a large project like Linux kernel.
Randall, you work for a lot of different clients, so you have to use whatever they use.
Yeah.
Do you use Git for your own? Obviously, you do for your own personal projects, or
anything I get to choose, I use Git.
Okay.
But what's great is that, and Junior can speak to this too, is that Git also has these wonderful interface layers where I can take an SVN or a CVS project and pull it in as if it was a Git project and edit it as if it was a Git project, but then commit changes back to the original repo, the CVS repo or the SVN repo, and they don't know that I'm using Git and editing it at 30,000 feet or on a cruise ship. They don't care because I'm publishing these changes using the SVN and CVS tools, but I'm using Git to manage my own local flow of commits.
How do you set up something like that?
Junior, talk about that.
I actually had this project that was customer project that was hosted in Subversion, and I did exactly that. But I, you can start very lightweight without using Git interface layer at all. You can start from, say, you have a checkout from Subversion, and then you create a new Git repository there and check everything in. And then you start building your own changes without ever bothering about Subversion side. And you just make commits, you make progress, and then you perfect your changes. After that, since what you did was inside of Subversion repository as well, you use Subversion tool to propagate those changes back to Subversion.
That raises one issue, of course, that people, problem people have with Git. Actually, Dries Beitart, who is the maintainer of Drupal, mm-hmm. says that for many of Drupal's designers, because they're not Linux kernel hackers, the problem is just lack of tools for Git. They're not as accessible or well supported, he says.
In the early days, Git's documentation was a bit lacking. It really required that you be on the mailing list and understand the culture. And I agree with that. This was a year ago, and I think
if you're in Linux, of course it's fine. But if you're working in Mac or Windows, interface tools and so forth to make it easier to use Git.
Yeah, Git's still a bit lacking on Windows. There's a Cygwin version that apparently works fairly well. But on the Mac, I'm using it fine from the command line. But that's all I really care about, is I'm a command line guy on the Mac.
I think somebody's writing a Git bundle for TextMate, too. So
Yeah.
I'm sure tools are coming along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's an Eclipse plugin. So if you're any place that Eclipse runs, you should be just fine with Git as well.
So, all right. Good. So I'll throw what Dries says. I mean, you know, that's the other thing. And a lot of this is just taste and comfort level and what you've been using.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, like you know, this is going to get back to the Emacs versus VI argument.
Right.
You know, it's a personal issue. What I found is that Git for me solves a lot of issues that I had previously faced using other source code managers, and it's because people like Unio and everybody else had really put a lot of effort into making it work for the distributed strategy. And we should actually get into some of the technical issues of it, which really make it better, like the SHA-1 identification of commits and things. Let's talk a little bit about that, too.
Well, let's start with I think the SHA-1 is very interesting. Let's talk about how you keep track of all of these bits and pieces that are inside Git.
Okay. So first of all, all your contents, that's files in your directories, when you tell Git, please store these things, Git will obviously copy that away into the repository so that you can retrieve them later. But also, it takes SHA-1 hash, that's a cryptographic secure hash, of that content, and treat that as the name of that content, so that when you give that name of the content to Git, please give me the content you named like this, with 20 byte hash. Git can give that back to you.
So what is the advantage of using these? Go ahead, Randall.
By cryptographically strong, what you mean is that it's very, very unlikely that in our lifetime we will have two different files, two different sets of contents that will actually turn into the same 20-byte hash or the same 40-hex character hash.
So
right?
it's a completely unique hash number that's been assigned to this. So what is the advantage of doing that?
The advantage of doing that is you can later validate your repository very efficiently, because everything is named with SHA-1 hash.
If it's been changed, if it doesn't match the hash, it's damaged.
Yes. Right.
Ah.
And I just talked about the leaf level, the individual files, but you have to store directory structures. So what we do is directory structure looks like dictionary of path name to those SHA-1 hashes. So if you have, say, readme file, then we store readme and associate that with SHA-1 hash of that file contents.
So we store that
dictionary, we call that the tree object in the repository database, and also we hash that representation to give it a name. So when you say, okay, you earlier gave me this name for my earlier tree structure state, please give me that back, then Git can say, okay, where is that tree structure? I found it, and this is a directory structure, I mean dictionary, that maps this file to that contents, this file to that contents, and you get everything back with just a single 20-byte number.
So a SHA-1 is represented not only as an individual contents for a file, which would actually remain the same even if I renamed the file, so the contents don't have to be stored twice once I rename it, but also for every level of the tree. So when I rename an entire directory, as long as the contents below it don't change, that still has the same SHA-1, all the way up to the top level of the tree. So if I have a given SHA-1, I know an entire tree structure below it, guaranteed.
Unchanged.
Yes.
So very valuable for keeping track of changes even to older parts of the tree. I mean, you're really getting an assurance that this tree is exactly what you think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's and actually very clever. Was that part of Linus's original spec for Git?
Yes. It's largely borrowed from another system called Monotone. And I believe Mercurial, I don't know about Bazaar, but Mercurial uses a quite similar structure. Uh-huh. So there aren't that many differences between modern distributed systems.
Right. I guess makes sense. If you got something that works as well, it makes sense to use it.
And the tree number, though, refers to only like the current snapshot in time of the entire file system. But with the next thing that Git does that's really interesting is it snapshots those with another layer of SHA-1 to represent commits, which is the change in the tree over time. There's also a next layer of SHA-1 to record those. Why don't you talk about that, Junior?
Yeah, that's the layer you just talked about. Is called commit. So one commit object points at one snapshot that was a tree. And in addition, it talks about who created that commit and why. Why part is really for human consumption. And also what the previous states were. I said plural previous states were because that's how we represent merges. So if you have a commit, then commit object points at the previous state, which is another commit object, and you know where and how, following which path of history, you came down to that state. Also, we obviously store a tree object hash, so we know exactly what state we are talking about when you give one single commit.
So the net effect is you have a horizontal timeline that has SHA-1s at each step that point at the previous ones for a linear history for a single set of commits, but maybe a branched history if it's merges. But each one of those also points to a vertical layer of all the tree at that point. So holding a single SHA-1 of a commit, I not only know the current state of all the tree, I know every commit that led to it guaranteed cryptographically.
Yes.
So really, Git has been designed, it sounds like, for kind of almost a nonlinear situation, which I guess is how programmers really like to work, kind of a little bit here, a little bit there, go back, go forward.
Actually, even if you are not doing nonlinear, or if you do not care about nonlinear, once you start doing distributed in a sense that you have your copy of document on your work computer and another copy of your document in your, say, on your laptop while you go on the road and work on that, you already have to deal with diverged branched development or document editing or whatever. Because even you are not aware that you are branching, you are right. Actually branching.
Right, right, right. It sounds like a very elegant solution. Has it changed much in terms of the specification since Linus first wrote?
The very, very basic structure hasn't changed at all. I mean, there are a lot of details, like the order of we take SHA-1 hash was swapped before and after compression and things like that. But the basic basic structure hasn't changed since April 2005.
Interesting.
I'm just, you know, this thing though about the whole idea of the Shahuan being able to generate the entire history from that.
It's clever, isn't that neat?
It's just incredible. That. It really solves a lot of the issues related to this. Talk a little bit about the various ways that merging is used in bringing these things together. I mean, what does Linus do? I hear he's doing octopus merges. What the hell is that?
He does a lot of merging. It's apparently.
Yes, he does a lot of merging, but technically, Git merge is really merging, making a commit that has more than one parent. When you are doing linear development or linear document editing, you just say, okay, I'm committing this new state, and my previous state was this single state by pointing at one commit. But how the way Linus works is basically he really doesn't do his own development that much anymore. And instead, he pulls or he merges with his lieutenants who do the real work. And what he does is, what they do is his lieutenants will start from something that Linus pushed out in the past, and Linus has his own development, and lieutenants will have their own lieutenants, so their history diverge. And when the time comes, Linus says, okay, let's get the change from my lieutenant A. And he says, okay, I'll fetch from him. And he grabs all the commit chain from lieutenant A. Now, Linus's commit chain and lieutenant's commit chain are forked, so there is a common ancestor between them. And what we do is, since they forked, Linus did this much work, and while Linus wasn't watching, lieutenant A did something else. So we look at the differences between those two history, and if they don't overlap, that is, if Linus didn't touch something but his lieutenant touched, then we obviously take whatever his lieutenant did, and vice versa. When there is some overlap, I mean, two people change the same file or same section of code, then we need to merge, and that is really the luckily minority case, not because Git is excellent, but because mostly because Linux project and the source code is highly modularized. You rarely step on each other's toes because one part of the system, if you are working in, say, SCSI subsystem, then you only deal with the files under devices and drivers, SCSI subdirectory or something like that. And so the source code is highly modularized, and that lets you do a merge without ever looking at the real file contents. But
although you could actually have a conflict in some sort of really common file, like let's say you define a system-wide constant that's used to define maybe the type of a SCSI disk. That might go into central.h. And one of the things I like about Git is it just lets that be added as part of a merge, as long as it doesn't conflict with anything else, right?
Yes.
And what happens when there is a merge conflict? Talk about that.
Yeah. When there is a merge conflict, it's really you look at the original, I mean, the common ancestor, and inspect the changes between original and Linus, and original and Lieutenant A. And if they touch the overlapping part, then that's too bad. We just show you, okay, here is what Linus did. On the other hand, here is what the other guy did. Now you get to choose. Or maybe just hand merge. What often happens is, this really depends on the type of conflict or type of content you are merging. For example, if your conflict appears in a file that keeps track of, say, blacklisted devices, then if person A finds out, okay, device ABC is bad, while the person B discovers or device XYZ is also bad, then they'll have additions of ABC and addition of XYZ in their copy. When you merge, then what you'll see is, oh, person A added ABC, but at the same point, person B added XYZ, in which case you don't choose between those two, you just take both. So that really boils down to what content really means. So you cannot really mechanically merge. But Git gives you what the situation is by showing what both parties did separately in the same file. So you can just open up the conflict file and see what the conflict is about and make an intelligent decision.
And you said something interesting there, which is that in order to do that kind of merge resolution, I don't want to get too technical here because we'll lose half the audience, but one of the problems that I've done when I played with CVS and SVN is trying to figure out that common ancestor. Like, okay, I started from revision 19. You went off and made these revisions from that. I made these revisions from 19. Somewhere, something has to record somewhere that we started both at revision 19, but Git doesn't require us to do that because it just knows. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, that's really a major selling point over CVS and this CVS and Subversion. Where that comes from is the fact that our commit object record where the commits where we came from. I mean, the previous states are recorded. So when you have a merge, then you have more than one parent for the commit. And if you visualize the graph of commits, that commit child pointing at its parent or parents, then you can say, I have these two commits, Linuses and Lieutenants, and by following the ancestry graph, the parent link of ancestry graph, you'll come up with the common ancestor. You can come up with common ancestor quite mechanically, and unlike CVS and Subversion, you don't really have to keep track of, okay, up to this point, I've already merged. That's something CVS and Subversion didn't record.
I could just hear 6,000 CVS users out there right now going, oh my God, if this solves that problem, I am switching to Git tomorrow. Truly. I mean, I tell you, because how you solve that in CVS, I don't know how to do it in SVM, but in CVS, is you have to do this weird dance of tags, and it's such a mess. It's like, okay, I'm going to fork from version 1.47 at this date, and oh, what a mess. And I tell you, one of the things Git solved for me is that. And again, and Leo, just to really bring up the date here, is that one of the things you really have in a distributed development system is you have people that make different things in different places, and you eventually have to bring them together. And what Git is optimized for is this whole separate people developing separate things and bringing them back together. That's what Git is really aiming at.
Does Git reflect a change in the way people write software from the days of CVS? In other words, is it answering something that didn't exist so much before?
You know?
I mean, it's an interesting question. Or maybe just that CVS wasn't, as good a tool as it needed to be.
I would suggest, just interrupting here, I would suggest that it's about recognizing as we've gone on that the problem of distributed development is not so much that we need a central place to record changes, but that we need a way to have divergence and convergence as status quo rather than the exception.
There, and that, so that is something that's changed in the way you write software.
You know, agree?
Yes. Git really changes. Git supports old style CVS or Subversion kind of centralized workflow, but it just supports it. It doesn't really encourage it. When you really start using Git, you start making more free experiments without worrying about bothering others kind of thing. So your end result tends to be much better than when you are using CVS or any of those centralized systems, because you can you are not perfect. And
yeah, I mean, for example, I've got my entire website for Stonehenge.com under Git, and the great thing is that at 30,000 feet or on a cruise ship, I can diverge a whole new strategy about the way I want the website to be looking. But my business partner, Brian, will keep updating the website with new information and stuff like that while I'm doing that. Well, the other thing that Git lets me do is rebase, that's a technical term from Git, my changes on top of his changes, so that when we eventually merge it back together, it looks like one linear set of changes rather than it being a divergence and merge. It actually looks like it's still a linear set of changes, which makes the history much cleaner as well. And that's another thing I've seen Git do much better than anything else.
Neat that you can use it for website design as well. That's great. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, I mean, it'll hold binaries. It can't, obviously, it can't merge binaries. It'll just say, here's a picture, here's a different picture. They both have the same name now. What do you want me to do?
Right.
But not so unlike text files where it can kind of halfway merge it and say, well, here's the interleaved lines. You go sort out this file before you commit. For pictures, it'll just say, here's a picture, here's a different picture. But it's great because I have, like I said, I have my entire website under there. And what's great is if I move an image from, say, this path to that path, I don't have two different histories anymore. This is also a difference from, say, CVS, where in CVS, you have a file-based history. If you rename something, you lose all the history. And you have this weird thing called the attic. There is no attic in Git. I tell you. Again, 5,000 CVS users just went, ah. Because
attic
is such a wrong problem with CVS.
What does the attic do to, what does the attic solve for CVS? This is just old stuff nobody wants anymore?
Anytime you delete something in CVS, it has to not check it out in the current release, but if you ask for, say, last month's release,
it has to know.
It has to pull it from somewhere. So what it does is it moves it into the attic. There's literally a directory called attic.
Jeez Louise.
It's completely messy.
So, again, the hash solves this problem by keeping track of trees very
efficiently.
Absolutely,
because we can ask for the release on this branch as of a month ago, and out in my working directory pops all the right files.
Right.
It's just really, really, really nice.
Well, we didn't mean to make this an ad for Git, but I think you've done a very good job, Junio, and you too, Randall, of making it.
Can we talk a little bit about the projects that are using Git? There's some big ones out there. Junio, do you know the projects that are using Git?
Obviously the kernel. And I think Randall mentioned Wine, I think.
That's
a Windows emulator.
Yeah.
They are probably oldest customer of Git. And there are ongoing efforts to migrate really large project like KDE. I mean, I'm not saying KDE folks are actively looking at moving to Git, but their people are thinking about experimenting with Git. And also, One Laptop for Child project.
Oh, really?
They are on Git, I think.
Yeah, I see it on the website, yeah.
Oh, that's really neat.
Yeah. And
there are quite high-profile people switching to Git. That's what I wanted to say.
Fedora seems to be on Git, it looks like. And I know that Perl is looking at switching to that away from Perforce, so...
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there is a history of Perl from all the way back to Perl version 1 that is entirely in Git now.
Uh-huh.
And the great thing is that as an archival tool, this is great because now I can download an entire history of Perl from the very first version and have it on my laptop and see how Perl has changed over the two decades now.
That's a scary history.
No kidding, but to be able to keep that. So if somebody's considering moving to Git, how hard is that to do?
That's probably a two-level question. One, you don't really have to. As I said earlier, you can use Git on top of your project version control system, like, say, Subversion. And you can get benefit from Git without really bothering others. So that's really a part of least resistance. So you still keep old people on old timers on Subversion or whatever tool they are familiar with, while newer people will use Git on top of that. And so that's one way, and that's very easy and simple. And once your developer or document editor or your population project participant get familiar with Git, then you may want to start switching the central repository to Git, perhaps with backward compatibility saying, if you are not using Git, then our old history is still kept in Subversion or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So that's nice, too. You can do both.
You can do both. But practically, nobody can really convert everybody to new version control system overnight. So it's really essential that you can convert people from one part of the project to get another part incrementally.
And although neither SourceForge nor Google Code support Git, there actually are a couple of places you can go to get public Git hosting. There's a host site called repo.or.cz where you can get a public Git archive host, which is very nice. A number of projects are there. And also at git.sv.gnu.org, the Savannah site has a Git hosting repository as well. So if you want to have your project shared amongst distributed people and have a central repository on a public box, there's a couple of places right there that do it for free.
Very neat.
Right. Yeah.
And there is another thing I recently discovered. There is a site called ohloh.net that they keep track of open source projects, source history, and develop. And the version control system they support are CVS, Subversion, and Git.
Right on. All right. People catching on. If I get some of my friends at Google Code to incorporate Git there, I'm sure I'll have some new friends as well.
Right. Well, it's been great talking to you, Junio. I thank you for allowing us to re-record. It sounds so much better this time, and I think I want people to be able to understand it. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And I asked fewer dumb questions
because you had the second time around.
I just shut up. I learned my lesson. Thank you so much, Junio. And
thanks.
The main page for Git is
http://git.or.cz.
Git?
CZ in Czech Republic.
Oh, really? And why Czech? You're not Czech, are you?
One of the major contributors, Peter Bodis, who works for SUSE in Czech, maintains this site.
Great. Git.org.or.cz. Okay, CZ. Right. And Git, the name comes from, is it an acronym? Is it?
Oh, no, it just Linus named his project after him. The Linux was named after Linus, and the Git was named after him.
Because he's a Git?
Git.
Literally,
Isn't that an unflattering word? I think it's... somebody said it's because it means, get over here. Get on it. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could do too.
Get my source code.
Get my source code. Junio, thanks so much for joining us on Floss Weekly.
Thanks. Yeah.
All right. We really appreciate it. Take care.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Bye.
So you sound like, Randall, you're a Git fanatic, a Git fan.
I use Git where I can. As I said, obviously some of my clients will, again, demand CVS or SVN, and I'll do what they tell me to do because that's who pays the paycheck. But when I can, I'm using Git on all my new projects. And even when I can, also I'm using the Git layer on top of CVS or SVN. So I really have the local archive, again, a 30,000-feet or a cruise ship, much handier.
Right. Very good. Very good. Well, I know it's been hard to schedule this, but I'm glad we could get it back in. And we're just going to have to figure out a way to work around your schedule, too, because if I'm busy, you're twice as busy.
Leo, you and I are both busy, and that's going to be the fun part. And this is why Floss Weekly is not quite weekly. I'm trying. We'll try to make that out. I just want to say, though, Linus did a great talk on the philosophy behind Git at Google on, I'm looking at the date here, where the hell is the date? Like in May 14th. And you can go to Google Video to pick that up. And I've been invited in October to do a technical talk on Git on the same platform that Linus was on. Oh. So I am going to be doing a technical talk on the details of Git, and they're going to broadcast internally on their Google Video network, and they're also going to record it, and it will be on Google Video. So
sounds like Google might be thinking of going to Git.
If anybody's listening to this podcast and wants to see me talk more about the technical details of how to use Git and why it works and that kind of thing, then please look at Google Video the day after October 12th.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. And we hope you will come back soon, and we'll have another Floss Weekly for you.
I have a couple more people lined up. We'll just have to find out the time to get those recorded.
Well, tell us. Who are we planning to get on?
I can't say until we get it done.
Oh, you're teasing us. All right. Thank you, Randall. You can visit Randall online. His website is Stonehenge, to the great dismay of the British monument Stonehenge. But hey, he got there first, you know.
The British Heritage Society wanted my domain too bad.
It's Stonehenge.org, Stonehenge.com.
Stonehenge.com, yes.
You have Stonehenge.com.
Stonehenge!
Right on!
And, with little people to call, yes.
See you next time on Floss. Thank you. Take care.